Several years ago now, I went to dinner with one of my good Jesuit friends to a little restaurant called Sorella's in Fairfax, California, just north of San Francisco. Sorella, which means sister in Italian, was started by two sisters from Italy, and their restaurant has become a fixture in Fairfax ever since it opened. Half the town must pass through there on the weekends. It is one of those places where whenever anyone comes in, they seem to know most of the other people who are already there. If you go to Sorella's on the weekends, you are guaranteed two things: a long wait for a table, and an accordion player who sits in the corner quietly playing, or who occasionally strolls around the restaurant to entertain the patrons. We were there on a Friday, and we were told we had about a 40-minute wait, which was neither unusual nor any bother. Sorella's is worth the wait. Several other groups were also waiting, including one family. That included a little girl who proudly announced to those of us waiting that it was her 6th birthday. She had no sooner announced that fact when, from the back of the restaurant, the accordion player broke into "Happy Birthday," and the whole restaurant began to sing to someone else. The little girl happened to be standing in front of me when "Happy Birthday" began, and the look on her face was something I will never forget. It was the look of pure bewilderment. Her 6-year-old brain could just not compute what was happening. As the singing died down, the look of bewilderment slowly turned into something more like contempt and indignation. And finally, she turned to her parents and said emphatically, "But it's my birthday." The parents tried to explain that other people could have the same birthday, or that some people were just celebrating their birthday even though their actual birthday was on another day. But she wasn't having any of it. And the contempt and indignation started to look like more like horror as her parents kept insisting that, in fact, people can share a birthday. Meanwhile, she just kept insisting, "But it's my birthday." Little did any of them realize the horror that was to come, as over the next hour and a half, "Happy Birthday" was played more than a dozen times. After about the 7th time, the sound of the accordion starting "Happy Birthday" brought on uproarious laughter in the entire restaurant, save one incredulous 6-year-old. When both her family and my friend and I got seated, I could still see her face. And when it finally got to her turn to have someone sing "Happy Birthday" to her, sadly, the thrill was clearly gone. Fortunately, it seemed the spaghetti was still tasty enough. For some reason, I thought about that little girl this week as I tried to get my own head around what we are celebrating today. The calendar has left us in this strange situation. The 4th week of Advent, frankly, the 4th Sunday of Advent, is barely a morning long. This is it. This morning is the 4th week of Advent, but it is also Christmas Eve. The last time this seems to have happened was in 2006, but I can't seem to remember it causing quite the same confusion, at least not for me. And for many of us, there are few holidays less amenable to vagaries in the calendar than Christmas. For many families, for many individuals, Christmas Eve and Christmas Day are laden with little rituals and traditions that give both continuity and meaning to the holiday, let alone any mention of the logistics involved in preparing a family to celebrate Christmas. Having the 4th Sunday of Advent, Christmas Eve, and Christmas Day condensed into 2 days can be an unwelcome and unnerving thing for many. There are those people as well for whom Christmas itself is an over-dramatized and over-indulgent end to Advent. The 4th week of Advent is rarely 7 days, it is always a little cheated. But for those people who love Advent more than Christmas, and there are many such people, today disappoints in other ways as well. For those of us determined to celebrate both the 4th Sunday of Advent and those of you committed to Mass on Christmas Eve, there is no getting around the calendar. There is little choice. We will see you again here later this evening. For parish staff and choirs and other committed to various ministries associated with worship and liturgy similarly, there's little choice but to make a day of it. But the jumble in the calendar this year, besides whatever inconvenience it may cause, might also serve as a little reminder about one of the great themes of this holiday that we have largely lost touch with. As Christians, the story of the incarnation that we tell, the story that begins with this gospel reading we have heard this morning of the Annunciation, is the story of a great disruption, the great disruption in human history. For Mary and Joseph, on a personal scale, the Annunciation and the birth of their son were an incredible disruption to the lives they had imagined for themselves. Whatever it was that Mary and Joseph wanted for themselves, as individuals or as a family, was completely disrupted by the arrival of Gabriel and his news of a different future. In more theological terms, the story we tell of the Nativity, the celebration we begin tonight and carry through tomorrow, is the great disruption of the history of humanity. It is the great disruption to the story of humanity told since the time of creation. It is the end of the old order. A new creation comes upon us. What was isn't any longer, can't be any longer. Christ comes among us. Emmanuel, God is with us. The old order of sin and death is no more. Even in secular terms, the story of Christ's nativity and eventually the story of his death and resurrection is something the world has had to account for ever since. Christians during these days will tell again of our belief that the one true God came among us as one of us so as to secure the salvation of all. And Christians will force the world to face the message that Christ brought with him, that we can love one another as God loved us, and in doing so live differently than we do today. Whatever other version of the human experience you want to tell, the Christian story must be accounted for. Whether it is dismissed or integrated into other stories, celebrated or ignored, the story of Christmas and what Christians say we believe haunts human history. It shadows every other history. It disrupts every other story. I think as Christians we know this deep down, and I think sometimes that is the reason we want to bring an order to Christmas for ourselves through our rituals and traditions. We make Christmas orderly. We do the same things every year so as to try to minimize the impact of what it is we are really saying, that God is coming into our lives again, once again, this night. That the God who calls us to love one another, to forgive one another, to care for one another, is coming again to ask those things of us again. The God who loves us so much as to come among us and share our human experience is coming again. And surely that must somehow disrupt who we think we are and what we think and what we do. Surely the incarnation of God's love in our lives must make some difference, must cause some disruption in what we think about ourselves, what story we tell about ourselves. Surely the belief that God is coming into our lives must at least make us wonder how we might respond or ask what we might do differently. Surely our celebration of Christ's birth must disrupt something. Otherwise, what is it we are doing? The coming of Christ was meant to repair what happened at the fall of Adam and Eve. If it is meant to be a new creation, then like the old creation it is meant to overturn, maybe it should begin with a little chaos. The calendar places that idea before us this year. It is the fourth Sunday of Advent. It is the fourth week of Advent. It is Christmas Eve. I wouldn't be surprised if it was someone's birthday. The God for whom all things are possible is coming again, soon, very soon. The God for whom all things are possible is here with us now. Surely those claims must disrupt something in our lives. And so along with everything else you have to do in the next 5 hours, Perhaps that is worth thinking about as well. Together we stand and we profess our faith. I believe in one God, Father Almighty, maker of all things, earth, of all things visible and invisible. I believe in one Lord Jesus Christ, the only begotten.